Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
My debut book, Manifest, 7 Steps to Living Your Best Life, is out now, and you can order it from Amazon, Waterstones, or any other major bookshop. In this book, you will learn absolutely everything that you need to know about manifestation. You will understand that it really is a self-development practice to live by, to empower yourself, to step into your light, to become the best version of yourself that exists, and to attract anything you want into your life. I cannot wait for you all to read it. And if you love it, please don't forget to rate and review on Amazon, Audible, or wherever you purchased it from. Thank you so much and happy manifesting. Hello and welcome back to another episode of The Moments That Made Me with me, your host, Roxy Nafusi. I am so excited for today's guest. It is the absolutely incredible Scarlett Moffatt. Scarlett is a TV presenter, podcaster, and author. She was also named Queen of the Jungle when she won I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here in 2016. I cannot tell you how looking forward I am to this and to discover her 3 defining moments that got her to where she is today. Hi, Scarlett.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm so excited. Like, honestly, I listen all the time. I can never say his name right, but you had Will Poulter on.
Oh my God. He was the first episode I ever recorded. I was shitting myself.
Oh, he was like, yeah, I really enjoyed that. Because like, when I watch him on movies now, I think, you like meditating. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like I know him more. I'm like, and then when I'm watching films with my friends and I'm watching, I'm like, he likes meditating, you know? He got his first break when he was 12. I feel like you get to know inside information.
Oh my God, that's so funny. He's so great. He's so handsome.
Yeah, he's very handsome. He's like unconventionally handsome, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah. I'm a big fan of Will. But Scarlett, we jump straight in on this podcast to your first defining moment.
Oh. I think it would be when I was around 11, sort of lots of things happened to me that at the time it was a hard time, but I feel like it's made me who I am today. So within the space of sort of 3 months, my dad got diagnosed with skin cancer, and they didn't know if he was going to make it because the tumour was wrapped around his spine. And then I smashed my teeth on my bike, which then resulted in me getting Bell's palsy. And I then developed sudden onset tics, which is like a mild form of Tourette's. So within sort of like a few months, just everything changed. I was quite lucky up until that moment that I'd been able to be this naive child, sort of bubble wrapped, and nothing bad had ever happened. So I didn't really understand that, you know, life wasn't rainbows and unicorns, because up until then it sort of was. But I do think it made me a stronger person. I know that's very cliche, but I do think that sometimes you have to have difficulty so that you can appreciate good times.
100%. Oh my gosh, I had no idea. And that is like a hell of a lot to go through. One of those things alone is something most people will never have to experience in their lives, let alone all three. And for those who are listening, because funnily enough, my sister had Bell's palsy, and I've never met anyone else or spoken to anyone else who's had it. So for those who don't know what Bell's palsy is, could you explain?
It sort of looks like you've had a stroke because it paralyzes muscles on one side of your face. So I just literally, I remember, I was probably too old to be playing with Cabbage Patch dolls, by the way, but I remember I was playing with Cabbage Patch dolls and I was like making them talk to each other. And all of a sudden, my face just drooped, like my whole face, my eyes, my mouth.
Do you remember the exact moment?
Yeah, it was like, it's so weird, that, isn't it? Because I can't even remember what I had for my breakfast this morning, but I can remember that moment so vividly. And I remember standing in front of the mirror and literally screaming into it, trying to get my face to go straight. And I remember just sort of looking and shouting my name. I was shouting, Scarlet, Scarlet, trying to get it to go normal. And then when I went downstairs, my mum was just like, What's happened? Like, she thought I'd fell and hurt myself. And then I got the diagnosis of Bell's palsy, which they don't quite know why I got it. They said it could have been like through the trauma of the accident and things. Mm. But they didn't quite know why I got it. But luckily, I had like speech therapy and I had like steroid treatments, so it did go. I still haven't got a symmetrical face, but again, that's something I've learned to embrace. It was for many years I didn't dare get in photos. Like, one of my biggest regrets is because I smashed my teeth and I had Bell's palsy, I just hated the way I looked, and I don't have any photos with my grandma where I'm smiling. Oh. And that's the biggest regret ever. So now I think I make up for it by probably being annoyingly happy. Like, I feel like I'm never not smiling now.
Oh my God, I feel really emotional. I just like thinking about your younger self and just how traumatic that must have been to that, you know, you describing yourself, looking in the mirror and just screaming. It's just such a lot for a child to go through, and I just want to give you like your younger self a hug.
And thank you, that's so kind of you. Yeah, I think, and you know, like I actually do like speaking about Bell's palsy now, because I feel like it's actually a condition that affects a lot of people, but it's quite unheard of, I think. Unless you've had someone in your family have it, you know, it's a condition that no one really quite understands. And I do get a lot of people messaging me who's had it and being like, oh, like, thank you, because now I know I'm not the only one. And, you know, so I like to talk about it. And I've been able to come full circle, and I've actually done a documentary, which is something really new for me, for Channel 4. And that's all about, there's been this sudden rise of young girls getting onset tics, which is something I had shortly after my Bell's palsy. And yeah, it's been really interesting, because normally sudden onset tics, which is like a mild form of Tourette's, it comes in young boys. But during lockdown over the last 2 years, you know, hospitals have went from seeing 4 to 5 teenage girls a year to seeing 4 to 5 weekly or monthly.
Wow.
So they think it's maybe the stress of lockdown. So it's been really interesting to sort of come full circle and show people, you know, like your tics can fade eventually in some people. And yeah, it's been good.
100%. I think there's nothing more empowering than being able to use our own experiences for good and to help others and make them feel better. And, you know, it really is so true that I think when you hear that somebody else has gotten through something that you're going through, you do feel just like there's hope. And that's such a powerful thing, you know, hope. So for you, I assume the tics came as a result of the stress and the trauma of the Bell's palsy. Yeah. So
I think just everything that happened with my dad, because we didn't know if he was, like, I was only 11, and I remember sort of my mum explaining that my dad might not be back for Christmas and that he's poorly. And then so we would go and see him in hospital, but no one ever really told me exactly what was wrong. And then one night I heard my mum on the phone to my nan talking about cancer. And so I then, like, sort of started asking everybody at school, and it just sounded like this really scary thing. And then I remember just being really fearful. But my dad never, even in hospital, like, never showed that he was, you know, he was very strong. Like, whenever I would come in, he would just pretend that he'd be like, we're just having a checkup, you know. Oh. And he ended up having, I think it was like 120 stitches in his back. He had to have a leg graft and everything. But he does use that to his advantage, because when we go on holiday now, because he's got a big, like, scar, it's like a delve in his back, he tells people he was bitten by a shark and he gets loads of free drinks. Like, he just tells lies. He just tells this cool story. He's like, yeah, I was bitten by a shark, swam off. People are like, get the shots.
Get the shots.
Shut in.
So for you, what were your tics?
So I had, I'd blink a lot. So it almost felt as if my eyes were, this sounds really silly, but it felt as if my eyes weren't wet enough. So I would blink loads and loads. Right. And then I'd have like a short breath tic where I'd just breathe constantly, but like really shallow breaths. Mm. And sometimes little shoulder jerks as well. That was only when I was really stressed, or if I try to suppress my tics. So if I was at school and I really concentrated on not ticking, then as soon as I get home, like, I'd just tick more. It right. would be, you know, like when you feel like you need a sneeze, it was almost like that feeling. Yeah. So then you'd be like, it would be a release when you'd get home and finally be able to do it. But I'm really fortunate that I came out of that. But some of the amazing young women that I've met who do have tics really enjoy it. You know, they think that it gives them sort of a personality. It's like a character trait. So I feel I feel like people are a lot more accepting now than they sort of were late 90s, early 2000s. I feel like we're all a bit kinder to each other.
I think so. I definitely think so. And do you think that, because obviously now it's like, I love that you've said that now, even though you said annoyingly happy, but I don't think it's annoying. I think it's amazing. And I think you've obviously used it to, you know, really empower you and who you are now, and gone, right, I'm going to smile as much as can and, you know, and really make the most of today and the present and all of that. But did you find that as a teenager it affected your confidence? Because I feel like those years, you know, it's just, they're mind-boggling. We're all trying to figure out who we are. And
I feel like whoever said being a teenager is like the best days of your life were absolutely lying. Yeah, because I don't know anyone where they're like, oh, I wish we could go back in time and go to school. Like, no one ever said no that. One. Like, I couldn't think of anything worse, to be honest. I think because, you know, it's a time when you're trying to fit in, because all you have is school, really. Mm. So it's like a huge part of your life. So I wish I could go back and just give myself a shake and say, like, you don't have to fit in. Because I went through so many phases. Like, I remember getting my mum and dad to buy me some Fred Perry jumpers so that I could be a chav, so that I could blend in with the chavs. Then I went through, like, a goth stage and I'd get in trouble for wearing eyeliner all the time. I went through a bit of an emo stage. I just did anything to fit in. Because as a kid, I was quite odd anyway. Like, me and my dad would go metal detecting and would do war reenactments and we'd go looking for crop circles. And so I've always been quite an odd kid, which then was emphasised by the fact that I smashed my teeth, I could eat an apple through a letterbox, and half my face was droopy. You know, I do understand why I was an easy target. Like, I can laugh about it now, because I think as much as I had low confidence, what it did teach me is I never wanted to make anyone else feel as bad as I felt. And I think from that, I ended up becoming a kinder person. And I think that's a big thing in my whole life now, is to make sure that I'm as kind as possible. And to be honest, when I got on Gogglebox, I did that as a favour to a friend. And that was through being kind. So I do think, if all that hadn't happened, I probably wouldn't be where I am now.
Oh, I don't think that. I would. And you can tell, like, you have such a warm energy. Like, you really do. I can, like, even talking to you, I'm just smiling. And by the way, me and my sister were obsessed with you on Gogglebox. Like, we would sit every week and watch it, and you were like our absolute fave. So she's going to be buzzing that I'm recording. Absolutely loved it. It was so, did you enjoy that? Then did you expect it to get so big?
I really did. No. I mean, we got on, I never applied or anything. So I went to college with a guy called Tommy, and he rang me one day and he said, "Oh, I've got this job as a researcher." And I thought he meant like a scientist. And I was like, "Oh, a researcher, what are you researching?" And he said, "Oh, no, it's for TV." And I was like, "Oh, right, okay, what?" And he said, "I need to get a family from County Durham to represent the Northeast on a show called Gogglebox." He was like, "You know quite a lot of people. Would you do me a huge favour? Ring around, see if anyone's interested." So I said, "Okay, what's the premise of the show?" And he went, "So you watch the telly?" I went, "Uh-huh." And he went, "Yeah, that's it." And I went, honestly, "That sounds shit. They'll make shows about anything that you're watching people watch telly." I was like, "Nah, they've run out of ideas now. The world's gone mad." So no one wanted to do it. And he was like, "Look, can you just do the audition for us?" And I was like, "No, because we don't want to be on telly, Tommy." And he said, "No, it's just so it looks like I've done my job properly." I was like, "Aye, all right then." So they came round. And I think actually, because we didn't want to be on it, it meant we were really relaxed because we weren't trying to perform.
Yeah.
And that was like on a Saturday. And then on the Monday, we got a phone call saying, "Yeah, we'd like you to be on the show."
Oh, and then they were like, my goodness.
Yeah. And I was like, "No way." And it was my dad that actually was like, "No, come on, we've got to do it. It's 50 quid each and a free takeaway." I was like, "Yeah, you're right. You're right. Let's do it."
Amazing. Oh, I love that so much. Oh, my goodness. I really feel, I don't know, I feel like you were meant to be where you are to because of everything you've been through so that you could help like thousands of other people. I really do. It's so aligned.
Thank you. I mean, I know there's lots of people who go through worse than me. You know, I'm in no sort of, you know, I understand that. But I do think, when you have a platform, even if you're not exactly, like, searching for a platform, you should use it in, like, the best way possible. Well, at least try anyway. I'm not saying I don't make mistakes because I do, but I try.
I think you're doing amazing. So, Scarlett, what was then your second defining moment?
I would say probably winning I'm a Celebrity. Even though I hate that word celebrity, you know, like it makes me cringe. Like I love the show. I always call it the jungle. I'm always like, "Oh, when I won the jungle," because I just, even when I was on it, it felt like, I think I had massive imposter syndrome because it felt like I was not a celebrity. You know, I was sat around with like Larry Lamb and Carol Vorderman and Joel Dommett and all these people. I was like, and then I was just sort of on the telly watching telly.
Oh, bless you. You're so sorry.
Felt like a cheat. But I think that was definitely a defining moment in the fact that I felt accepted. You know, I felt like it was all right to be a bit weird. And I feel sad that it took me so long to sort of get that. And you should never sort of want, you should never have to feel acceptance through other people. It has to come from within yourself first. But I think that did massively help me go, "Oh, so I don't need to try and look a certain way or act a certain way. Like, I can just be a bit weird."
Yeah, That, I mean, what an amazing thing to learn. It doesn't matter when you learn it, as long as at some point you do. Like, it's life-changing.
It really is, because it sort of just put everything into perspective. I felt like I'd spent so long missing out, like whether it was through the way that I look. Like, I remember before doing I'm a Celeb, going on holiday with my friends and not going to pool parties because I didn't dare. I thought everyone would laugh at me, or I would, you know, wear a baggy T-shirt and then quickly whip it off as I was getting into the pool. Like, I'd walk in, like, to the pool side on holiday, and I'd strategically work out where the best place to sit was that I couldn't be seen. And you know, and I feel like I hid for so long, even like when I watch old episodes of Gogglebox, because I love watching Gogglebox. And I sit all the time, like, right on the edge of the sofa or with a cushion over me, you know, just to try and make myself as small as possible. Yeah. And I missed out on so many great opportunities, like so many wonderful life experiences, all because I was that bothered about fitting in and being accepted. So after I'm a Celeb, I was sort of just like, do you know what? Some people are going to like me, some people aren't. And that's fine.
Do you feel like it was almost exposure therapy? Like, you were so seen in the jungle, there was nowhere to hide. And then you were accepted for, and not just accepted, loved. And, like, you know, people, and you were entertaining, and, you know, and people, and you won. I mean, you won. And do you think that that was, you know, or you had to face all your fears and do it, and then it was all better than you imagined it could be, and then that was just like the push?
Yeah, I think I was sort of catapulted into the unknown, because I didn't really know, you know, all I'd done is Gogglebox. We didn't go to like red carpet events. I wasn't like in the paper, or, you know, so all of a sudden I was like bombarded with images of myself. And, you know, every day I was getting trolled. And I think if I didn't look at myself and think, actually, you're all right, I think it would have been a different story. You know, I think I sort of had to go, no, Scarlett, like, you're fine as you are. Like, it doesn't matter if these people don't like you.
Right.
It's a bit like, you know, if you're a hairdresser and you're looking in front of the mirror all the time. Like, you sort of accept yourself a bit more, because you're like, yeah, that's what I look like.
Right.
It was a bit really. It was a bit like that.
And do you think that, because I feel like the jungle is such a unique experience. Was it like therapy? Like, is there something quite therapeutic about it? This, because it's so, I don't know what the word is, but you've not got any of your normal distractions.
Isolated.
And
And like, even if you went to trials and stuff, the people who would take you there, like, they wouldn't be allowed to talk to you. You know, the watchers would have stickers on, so you had no concept of time or anything. You know, it really is that. It really does feel like you're fighting for food. It really feels like a proper jungle experience. Like, all my friends were like, yeah, but do they give you bacon sandwiches? Like, and I'm like, no, I promise you, like, you're really not. I think it was just like, you just have no phone. You're not with your loved ones, the people who normally sort of protect you. And you're with your own thoughts quite a lot. I think that was the first time ever that, like, you sort of just had hours to kill with your own thoughts. And I realised, without sounding big-headed, that I actually like my own company, which is something that I would avoid before. I'd always try and make sure I was around noise and a buzz. Whereas I was like, oh, I don't mind being left with my own thoughts.
I love that. And there's nothing, I think that is, for me, that is kind of a definition of happiness, is when you can just sit with yourself doing nothing and you're just like, yeah, I'm good.
Yeah.
Like, this is nice. That's like contentment, isn't it? And the last thing I want to ask you about that is, you mentioned trolls, and you know, I think I forget that they're like, because I'm always like, oh, it's so great. But there is that side of it. And there is that dark side of, you know, being recognized and being, you know, in the public eye. And how do you, And how did you, or how's your relationship to it changed? And how do you kind of cope with it so that it doesn't affect you and get into your subconscious?
I think the key is happiness. Like before, if ever I wasn't in a happy place within myself, as in things weren't going particularly well, or, you know, you have an argument with friends or family, then I realised that the trolls had more of an effect on me because I wasn't happy in myself. So I almost went searching to see the bad things, you know, almost like a woe is me, you know, let's bully myself, you know.
Oh, my God. It's like self-harm.
Yeah, it is. I think it is like self-sabotage, you know, like, but I go searching for it. It almost became like, you know, you just sort of, you can't help yourself.
Yeah.
But I think the thing that got me, I remember, so the one thing that I liked about myself, I do like, is my nose. I've got like, my dad always says, oh, you've got a Disney princess nose. So it's something that I always loved about myself. And when I came out of the jungle, there was loads of articles saying rhinoplasty surgeons say Scarlett's gone too far, and all these articles about my nose, which I was born with. Also, if I had had surgery, which I hadn't, it's my body, my choice anyway.
Yeah.
You know, so it doesn't matter anyway. But it was my actual nose that I was born with. And I remember sitting one night and Googled, like literally for about 7 hours, Googling to find a surgeon that could make my nose bigger.
Stop.
Yeah. And I remember just feeling so sad, and then and sort of just being like, Scarlett, you can't change everything about you because they're going to find something else. And so I think I just...
And you do have a perfect nose, correct, by the way.
Thanks.
You do, just so you know.
I'd start talking about it then, because I think the thing is, because like I'm really close with my mum, dad and little sister, and because they thought I was living the dream, I didn't want to shatter that illusion. So whenever I was feeling sad, I didn't dare talk about it to them because I almost felt like I'd be letting them down.
Aww.
Whereas then I realised actually it's good to speak out. Like, you know, what is it, a problem
shared
is a problem halved. Yeah, so I did struggle, and I'd be lying if I said it doesn't still bother me. It does some days, but not nearly enough. Like, not, I'd say the positives outweigh the negatives now. And now I actually, if I do get trolled, I message the trolls and I send them the number for Samaritans. I ask if they're okay, because I think sometimes we picture trolls as these sort of mythical creatures that live under a bridge, when in actual fact, they're just people, like exactly the same as me and you. But I know I've never wanted to project that much hate onto someone. So I try and put myself in their situation and think, how are they feeling to be that angry? And so now when I get trolled, I message them the number for Samaritans and I'll ask if they're okay. And like 99.9% of the time, they'll be like, I am so sorry. Like, no, I'm not in a good place. Thank you for reaching out. Because they're just sad people. You know, they're sad. Like, there's a reason why they're so angry, you know, because no one happy does that.
No, I agree. And also, I think you made a really good point at the beginning that what kind of state you're in, it really determines how you take something on, like how you feel about a comment. And I think that's so true in life anyway. Everything is about our state of mind and how we're feeling. And so I think being conscious of what we're letting in. So if you're having a bad day, you know, not maybe being on Instagram where you could be open to those kind of, you know, negative comments or whatever. And also just, you know, emphasizing the importance of self-love and self-development and why, you know, if we all work on ourselves, everything, you know, as a community becomes better.
Yeah. And I think like one of the big things, and it sounds such an easy thing, but like, I would just, anyone who made me feel crap about myself on Instagram, and I don't just mean trolls, I mean people who, you know, like I'd feel down because they'd always be talking about, I don't know, going, like triggers for me, like going to the gym all the time, or the life would appear perfect, or if I was single and feeling like I wanted a boyfriend, for some reason I'd follow loads of happily married people to torture myself every day. I then just deleted those people or muted them so they didn't come up on my feed. You know, it's like little things like that. So the first thing you're doing when you wake up isn't going, oh, wow, look how amazing everyone else's life is but mine. You know, it's like, and also just the power, knowing the power is within you, is that something can only affect you if you let it, you know,
100%.
Because someone can say something, but you own the power. You can go, actually, no, fuck yeah, that doesn't bother me. Yeah. And get on with your day.
I completely agree.
It is a hard thing to do. It's not just as easy as that. It's something you have to really work on. And I never thought I'd say this, but mindfulness is my new best friend. I never thought I'd be the type of person that would meditate or would manifest or would, you know, sort of do affirmations on a morning. I never thought I'd be the person who'd wake up on a morning going, today's going to be a good day, because I thought it was all like hippie stuff, but it isn't. Like, it actually, I promise you, from like a Geordie lass who it's so far-fetched from her life, it really works. Like, it really works.
Oh, I love to hear it. I really do. I love it.
Push Your Peak is a brand new podcast brought to you by Wattbike. Join me, Louise Minchin, and some of the world's most incredible sports people to learn what it takes mentally and physically to push yourself beyond your limits. Whether you're an elite or everyday athlete, it can be hard to continually progress. How do you push yourself out of your comfort zone? Where do you go to find that inner drive? Tune in to hear these inspiring stories and take away the belief that you can achieve your own goals no matter how big or small. You can find us wherever you got this podcast. Just search Push Your Peak.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet Plush Care, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So, Scarlett, what was then your third defining moment?
Well, I've always been a person who's very like, I don't need no man. I'm very independent. But it is actually meeting my boyfriend, Scott. I've been with him 3 years now. And I think I'd sort of given up on love. I felt like it was my fault that I was sort of just getting with arseholes, really. Like, I tended to... I think because I was vulnerable, like I was in a bad place, I'd almost choose people who I knew were wrong for me. You know, I chose people who they ended up as soon as we split up selling stories or going on TV shows. You know, it was obvious they were using me, and all my friends and family around me would tell me, but I just didn't want to hear it. And I started to think, well, maybe this is all I deserve. And then as soon as I met Scott, and he's just a really kind person, I think when you're younger, you when you're thinking about becoming in a relationship, you have a list a mile long. And I've realised that the only thing that's important is being with someone who's kind.
Mm.
And everything else is a bonus.
It's so true. So how did you guys meet? And was it like instant? Tell me. I want to know everything.
So we actually have known each other since we were like 17.
No.
So we live in the same village and stuff. And I've always quite fancied him, to be fair. But it never sort of worked out. And then I hadn't seen him for maybe 4 years because I lived in London. He'd pop up on my Facebook sometimes, but we'd not speak or anything. And then I had this weird paparazzi dude hanging outside my house. But when I say outside my house, I mean like in my garden.
Oh, God.
And yeah, so it was quite scary because I'd just moved in by myself and I was 27. And there was this 50-year-old dude in my garden. And I was like, oh. So I rang the local police station because I thought, this is not 9-9. It's not I'm not in like emergency, but I'm a bit scared. And they were like, oh, actually, we'll dispatch some police officers out to you. And Scott was one of the police officers.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. This is the best story ever.
And he walked in and I've got a little chihuahua called Bonnie and she didn't bark at him. And I was like, that's weird because normally she like,
she knew.
Is an angry dog. And I was like, oh, she really likes you. And then he'd actually dramatically lost weight. I think he'd lost something like 6 stone. So he looked like human being. Yeah. And he was like, oh, you don't recognize me. And I was like, oh my word. I was like, no, I didn't. And then I actually was the one who come on to him. Like a few weeks later, he popped up on my Facebook and I commented on a picture of him and his dog. And I put, oh, so cute. And the dog, which I know is really, it's so bad.
I love it.
I was just blatant. I thought, no, I've got a really good vibe from you.
Yeah.
And then it's just like been really easy since. I never realised, I think, I used to think a relationship had to be full of drama and stories, you know, but actually, like, we genuinely, like, we just get on. We don't really do anything exciting, but it's like contentment. And I think that gave me faith in people again. I think I'd started to lose faith and trust in people. And then I think I met Scott for that reason, to remind me that, you know, not everyone's a dickhead, basically. There's nice people out there.
Oh, my God. That is the most beautiful story. And I don't know. I find that so inspiring to hear. And I think for anybody that's listening that's also maybe single or is that has been in lots of, like, toxic relationships can look at that and just go, yeah, it is there for everyone. And I think it's just about who knows. It could be the policeman that comes to your house.
Exactly. And also, amazing. Like, I think because a lot of my friends were, like, married or had kids, I'd put a lot of pressure on myself as well. Mm. And just don't do that because everyone's timeline's different, you know.
But I totally agree.
Yeah, like, sometimes, like, some of my friends are, like, 32 and they're like, oh, I haven't found anyone. And I'm like, you're 32? Chill out.
Exactly.
You're not 102. Like, just calm down, eh? Like, you've got plenty of time, hon.
Oh, my God. I could honestly talk to you all day. You are the best energy. That you really are as kind as you set out to be. Like, you can just feel it. And
thank you,
Roxy. It just radiates. And it's such a pleasure and an honor to talk to you. It truly is.
Thank you.
But before you go, I've got some quick fire questions for you.
Mm-hmm.
The first one is, what is your most memorable book?
Oh, this is such a hard one because there's so, I would say the most memorable book is Jacqueline Wilson, Girls Under Pressure.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, Jacqueline Wilson.
I used to love her books.
Oh, yeah, like I just feel like they're timeless. Like genuinely sometimes I actually go back and read like Jacqueline Wilson's Illustrated Mom or Tracy Beaker. Like I actually go back and read them. And I didn't realise like they have so many deep meanings.
Right, well, I'm going back.
Jacqueline Wilson was when I first fell in love with reading. You know, I love reading so much. And yeah. I think her books were the ones that got me hooked. I was like, oh, this is as good as watching the telly. You can make it
I love
in your head.
That. It's so true. Your favourite quote?
Oh, now, I always say that my dad, you know, my dad's the one that told me this quote, but I don't think he made it up. It was probably someone else, but he always says, bullies are like sandpaper. The more they wear you down, the more polished you become.
Oh, I love that. That's beautiful. Well, I've never heard it before, so your dad can claim it.
Yeah, maybe Mark Moffat did create it. Who knows?
Your most influential mentor?
Oh, I'm going to say my nanny. So my nan is just like the greatest, and some of my favourite memories ever are sitting at her house, watching Norman Wisdom, eating peanut butter sandwiches and drinking Horlicks. She's just, she's had like not the easiest of like upbringings, but she's such a powerhouse and she's such a kind person. So yeah, definitely my nanny.
It's so beautiful. Your go-to feel-good film?
Oh, Calamity Jane.
What? What's that?
Calamity Jane. It's like this musical with Doris Day, and she sings songs like, I've just come in from the windy city. So good. If ever I feel sad, I order a chicken kebab and I stick Calamity Jane on and the world's at right again.
Dream. A moment where you felt most proud?
Oh, that's so hard. Do you know what, actually? I was going to be a bit of a big head and say when I graduated and stuff, but actually, I was talking about this to Scott the other day, and my little sister a few weeks ago decided that she wanted to wear a suit to the prom. And I was like, oh, but do you not want to wear a dress? Because everyone else has been wearing a dress. And she was... And like the way that she was chatting to me, and I was like, what happens if people stare? And I was just so proud that she's just unapologetically herself. She's the opposite of how I was at school, and she doesn't try and fit in, and she's just really comfortable in herself. So, and I do feel like part of me, I can't take full credit, but part of me has rubbed off on her. And I think that makes me really proud to know that sort of she'll never feel how I felt when I was young, you know?
Oh, that's so nice. Oh, that's such a nice story. I love that. A song that cheers you up?
Oh, I've got a few. Anything by Donna Summer.
I love it.
A legend. And my karaoke song is Minnie Riperton, Lovin' You. So I'm going to go with that.
Oh, I love that you've got a karaoke song. Top tip for dealing with stress?
Oh, take everything in small steps. So if you are a little bit stressed about, I don't know, even just going for the big shop, for example, don't look at it as a whole big thing. Go, right, I'm going to brush my teeth. And then once you brush your teeth, you'll probably find you do your hair. Then you can put clothes on. Then you can get to the car. You know, if you take everything in little steps when you're stressed, things don't feel as big and overwhelming. So, yeah, baby steps. And make sure you champion yourself when you do push through stress.
Yes, I totally, a little reward for yourself.
Yeah.
And the last question is, who's the first person you call to share good news?
Oh, it's Scott, you know. It is Scott, yeah. Angel. And like, because he gets as excited as me, if not sometimes a bit more excited.
That's so sweet. Oh, Scarlett, thank you so, so much. You are such, like, you are just pure joy. You really are.
Oh,
thank you so much.
And this is now, I actually wrote this on my manifestation. Like, I've got a list of things that I wanted to do this year. Yeah. And so I can tick it off now. Yeah. So thank you.
Oh, my God. That makes me so happy. I love it. Thank you so much, my love, and have a wonderful rest of your day.
Oh, thank you, and you.
Planning Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kyler Tsitis.
I'm Kayla Tsinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.